Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode and the entire season are proudly brought to you by Pregnant Together, a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who's ever felt different through the process of creating your family. Check them out at www.pregnanttogether.com. And listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month for free by clicking the beautiful link in our show notes. Check it out.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
And I was like, she didn't want to carry. It was simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
People who are smart, like, understood and, like, got the message.
Conversation done. None Back of your off. Business anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a lot. In the beginning, it was a lot. Like, oh, you're two women, you know? Only gay guys have to do this.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I don't know why I get so tickled every time I say that. I think it's amazing. I just love it. I love it in a good way, because I think we're awesome, us gays and queers. My name is Jamie. I'm your host, and you are listening to this show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities. And this conversation today, yeah, okay, my guest, Greer, here's a funny story. Greer ran into me on the street, I think it was like during season one, way back in the day, maybe it was season two. This was like 5 years ago. Greer passed me on the street and said, "Ovaries," when we were called If These Ovaries Could Talk. And I turned so quickly, like, "Yes, that's me." And she was like, "Oh my God, I love your show." Anyway, she talked to me and we talked about it. And she and her wife, she told me, were like just in the beginning stages of creating their family. And this show had been such a help to them. And now, full circle moment, Greer is on talking about that journey 6 years later, I think. And woo! When I say it's a journey, it's really a journey. And before I get into that, I just want to say, if you see me on the street or in the wild, don't hesitate to be like, "Jamie, oh my God," because I want to be recognized. Don't think I'm trying to be incognito in any way in my life. Go ahead and shout it to the rooftops that, "Oh my God, you're the host of the Queer Family Podcast." I would love that. I would absolutely love it. And then I get to tell my kids, you see, your mom is so cool. Because they don't think so. And they need to start thinking that. All right. So Greer, this episode, I just want to give you, I'm always giving trigger warnings nowadays. Hi, yeah, yeah. But we do talk about disordered eating a little bit and body image. So take care if that's something that could be triggering for you. I understand. All you need to hear is Greer and her wife, after a journey, ended up using a surrogate. And I think that's all I need to say. And I want you to just listen to this episode and enjoy. And just remember that we need to break down the taboos that surround all of the different ways anyone can create a family. There is no shame as long as it's created through love and good intentions. Am I right? Can I get an amen? Amen. I did it myself. I just really hope you all enjoy. And Greer's story really got me thinking about my own fertility journey. And new listeners might not know that I struggled with 2.5 years of infertility. I was on every fertility drug imaginable. It was rough. And I think it's really important to say, whatever you need to do for yourself to create the family of your dreams, you should do. I wholeheartedly believe that. And I'm sending all the baby dust in the world out to anyone who is struggling to get their families to them right now. I love y'all. I'm so happy you tune in week after week. And I hope you enjoy this here episode. My dog, Kira, is moving around on my bed over here. So I think that's my cue to just roll this tape. Helen, Beulah, Nicole, I love you so much. They don't exist, y'all. I don't. Well, Nicole exists, but Nicole's not here. Nobody's here except Kira, who wants my attention very badly right now. So here we go. Let's roll this tape, ladies. Roll that tape. Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Greer.
Hi, Jamie.
It's lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining me on this lovely Thursday afternoon.
Thanks for having me on this warm day in New York, finally.
Why don't we just jump right into it, Greer? You're a listener. You know the deal. You're going to give me your 30-second elevator pitch, as you know. So here we go. On your mark. Get set. Go.
My name is Greer. I identify as a lesbian, she, her, and I'm married to my wife, Alana. I always say that she's the smartest person in the room, but you would never know because she's so humble. We went through this journey of being moms together. I was very lost in the beginning of how to do that. And I found your podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
And through many different reasons, we ended up doing surrogacy. And I would like to talk a little bit and just share some of my experiences of IVF and kind of the shame that comes with using a surrogate and not being able to get pregnant, being in a two-woman relationship. So that's it.
Boom. I'm really excited for this conversation, Greer, because you wrote in and you told me your story. And I thought, of course, yes, because I've never actually talked to a lesbian couple who's used surrogacy.
Yeah. Oh, and I bumped into Jamie on the street.
Oh my God, Greer, you're the one who bumped into me and were like, ovaries, girl. Oh my God.
Just to be fair, I worked 15 years as a model agent. And, you know, that comes with like meeting a lot of people who think they're very important and then some people who are important. So like my wife always says to me, like, you are not celebrity like centered at all. And then like I see Jamie and I walked by her 3 times and then I was like, I'm going to go up to her. And like, I kept texting my wife the whole day and I was like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that. She was like,
oh my God,
you want to go up to Madonna and you went up to this lady on this podcast. And I was like, well, she's really been helping me.
Listen, I responded very positively to you knowing who I was. I just want to set the record straight for anybody who recognizes me in the street. Please tell me you know who I am because it means everything to me.
Because I was just like, I found this podcast that they're the ones naming doctors, they're the number ones naming like fertility clinics. We went through Growing Generations because that woman was on the show.
Oh, wow. A long time ago. She wrote a book called Growing Generations.
Yeah. So like Kim Brown was on the show. So we are like OG
listeners. Like, that was listeners. Like season one, season two.
Yeah. Our son now is 2.5.
You had a journey.
We had a journey. It's just nuts when you like put in like queer into the podcast and it's, you know, I was like in such a low place of like, I don't know if I can do this. And most of your friends who are going through IVF, they were all either straight or gay friends. And like, it's like, well, why won't your wife just try or something? And it was just like, so the shame and like your podcast was just like, okay, these two women already have kids. It was just nothing that I'd heard before. So it was like where I could get like books or where I could research. And it was like, I just don't think you guys knew what you were doing at the time to like really, no, but really help
no,
people like in my position. And like you had people talking about eating disorders and like things that weren't connected, I think, you know, just like all these things. So my wife will be like, yeah, she listened to that a lot. I was just like, I didn't have anything to go off of.
This speaks to my point of like why we started the show in the first place. And you're hailing it back to when it was titled If These Ovaries Could Talk. And I had Robin Hopkins as my co-host and co-founder of the show. And the reason this show started is because of my infertility journey. Exactly what you said. I couldn't find, I wasn't getting any solace from any of the sources or resources that were out there as pertained to infertility, trying to get pregnant, TTC, as they say, trying to get pregnant. Nothing was helping me. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I know there's so many queer folks who try to make babies. We should hear from them. We should hear it from this point of view. So I'm so very glad you just said that because it's very affirming to me. And yes, you are correct. We had no idea what the heck we were doing. And we are not, I'm still not an expert.
No, I mean it in the most like, in the most warming way, because I was just like, I don't think they know what an impact it's having on this person.
Oh, yeah.
Who like also lives in New York and like, it, you know, and that's like a privilege in itself. Like I was very privileged in the fact that like, you know, I'm white and have the financial means and like these doctors take my appointments and, you
and
know,
you live
all
in this liberal
and I
bubble.
Live in this city and I'm in a liberal bubble and all the other responsibility with like owning your privilege. But I also knew that like I was able to do this at all. You know, we were able to afford medication and like all of these things that a lot of my friends can't do being gay, lesbian, between the binary, trans, et cetera. And it's just a very vulnerable feeling as well. So it's like, you just feel like this in this place of like, who the fuck can you talk to? And then it's like, if you don't have these people who have gone through it talking about it, it's so isolating. And I was working in a field where there were no parents and 90% of the office is gay.
Very isolating. And it feels stigmatized.
A lot of things too.
Let's take it back. I'm really excited to delve into your story. And I am so sorry you struggled. I know how hard it can be and everybody's struggle is different. And so I'm excited. I really want to hear about it. Can we take it to briefly tell me about you and Alana's love story? How'd you meet and how'd we get to the baby making combo and how quickly did it come into the picture?
Our 10 year of dating will be this fall. So I was a youngin, 25 year old, and she is 8 years older than me. We met on an app, which I had never been on dating apps before. It was like newish at the time. Like it was for girls only, but it's called something different now. It's Datch when we met on it. And like I was with my two of my best friends at the time. They're both straight. And we were in their tiny apartment on like 8th and C. And my mom would always say, 8th is where you go to die. Like she like couldn't believe that like we would all hang out down there. We made a profile and like my friends were writing it for me. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. Like blah, blah, blah. And I had just gotten out of like a long distance.
Were you living that gay life already?
Yeah, I had like a quasi girlfriend in college. But in New York, I was like, all my friends were like straight. So I was like, I got to get out there. Having fun for sure. My parents knew, everyone in my life knew. She was like the second or third person to message me on the app. And we met up for brunch on like Sunday, which is like the worst date ever. But I was working like my ass off. I always say like it organically happened. Like it was much less intense than like other lesbian relationships I'd been in. Like we weren't together every day and like sleeping over like every day.
Wow. Okay. Good for you. It's hard.
Within like 4 months, we were living together. So,
of course. Okay. So there it is. There it is.
Yeah.
When you know, you know.
And by like 6 months, we had a dog. And I was like, you never had a dog before. So, like, there's like little notes of everything in there.
And when did the baby conversation come into the picture?
I probably brought it up before her. Because I was like, I always kind of took that off the table, like once I like really knew that I was gay. And I would always joke about being the aunt. And then I was like, when I met her, I was like, I could have your babies, you know?
Aw, that's so cute.
In my mind, I was like, we'll do reciprocal IVF. So we'll just freeze your embryos and then we'll like have time to wait.
The biological connection for you wasn't a thing.
The sperm donor was retired. and there wasn't a lot of it left. So I was like, let's just buy the rest of it. I was happy to have her baby, like if I was pregnant with hers. And then if in my mind, I was like, oh, I'll be able to handle everything. And then like, I'll just have another mm-hmm. child and then they'll be genetically brother and sister.
Yep. Yep. And one will each have the DNA, which is what I did, but without the surrogacy and without reciprocal IVF. But
exactly.
Yeah, that's the dream. And you think it's all going to work out, right?
Yeah. So. And then shit hits the fan.
So you had the conversation. Y'all were like, okay, let's do this. Let's use my embryo. Let's put it in you. We're going to do a little reciprocal IVF. We're going to get an anonymous sperm donor. Where was the conversation about like how you choose the donor or who, what kind of donor to get?
We joked about like what guy friend we would ask. And we were like, oh, like someone like so-and-so, you know, or yeah. someone like so-and-so. But at the end of the day, I was like, if I was asked that question, I said, all the guys we're talking about are going to be dads at some point. And right. I don't think that they could live with knowing that they're not involved in that child's life without mm-hmm. an emotional attachment. We've done a lot of work because we both have wonderful relationships with our dads.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, that's where like the shame and ingrained homophobia comes from. At least for me, I can't talk, you know, I can't speak for my wife. I'm proud to be a parent of the same sex to my mm-hmm. son, but it's like kind of grieving the fact that, you know, my son won't have a dad because of like the societal.
Yeah.
Just everything, you know, growing up, I was a 90s baby. I was born the last year of the 80s and Alana was an 80s baby. So it's like, she's the much chiller version of me. I'm like type A. She's like a lawyer, but she's like type like zero. Like she's just so chill. And she's just like, everything's fine. Like mm-hmm. blah, blah. But like, I just think there's some, it's like fucked up how you think. I think about that also because he's a beautiful person.
Your dad or your son?
Both of them, but my dad.
So it sounds like you've had a really great relationship with your dad forever.
Yeah, with trials and tribulations of being a teenager and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just appreciative that my family is what it is. You know, I know so many people who have had loss and who don't even have contact with their parents and things like that. So, but I'm like, why does my family have to look like that? You know, we're not carbon copies of each other. That's, you know, ingrained in me of what something has to look like. And like, I just wasn't born that way. So that kind of went into the decision of doing an anonymous donor because we want our family to look like what we want it to look like. And I think it would just mess me up knowing like, oh, it's Uncle Todd or whatever.
Do you think that the fact that you are the one who doesn't have the or wasn't going to have the actual genetic tie, do you think that that plays into to not wanting a known donor as well? Because knowing, this is for me, 100%, knowing the actual person who shares a genetic tie with my kid that I don't, that's part of the thing that played on me with having a known donor, to be quite honest. And it's okay to feel that way.
It's totally okay. I think with that, there's absolutely no equation that feels right except for what feels right for you.
Exactly.
I just knew always kind of going in, I was like, I can't do someone that we know.
Yeah, I get it.
Fast forward to, you know, we'll get to the end of the story, but now not even being able to carry.
Right.
I was like so worried that I was going to like resent the baby. I was going to not feel a connection. And I don't feel that way at all.
Yes. Say that. And also same. I am doing the cosign assigned to you because I had the same exact fears because my wife gave birth first. I went cuckoo ka-choo over this tie. It doesn't matter at all at this point, but you don't know it when you're going through it.
No, you don't.
This is why this podcast needs to exist, because it's important for us to talk about this and bring it out in the open. So when folks, like some folks might be going through it right this second at home listening, this takes out that taboo. It's so real and it's okay.
I would always think to myself, what about heterosexual women like suffering in silence?
Totally.
And now there's more, it's not as taboo to talk about, but they'll say like, I'm donor conceived.
Yes.
And for us, we have to talk about it, right? And like, I remember we were at our first Christmas after the baby was born, and someone in my family, I won't say who, but they're like, so what do you know about the dad? And I immediately, we weren't drinking because, you know, we were getting up at all hours of the night.
Good
and
for I was you. Like, I drank right through that. Oh. I just drank right through.
I mean, maybe I did have a drink. I don't remember. So maybe I was like drunker, but like, I just was like, I could tell you, like, I was like, just a little like spicy. I was like, he doesn't have a dad. We call him the donor. And like everyone at the table was like,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. Like
Nick on this, the dad yeah, talk.
This is like a learning space, you know, but I was just like so tired. And I was like, this is supposed to be like a vacation. And I was like, try being in my shoes, you know, like my dad probably was like pouring me a glass of wine, like, like relax, you know, like, but I'm just like, it's always that. And it's like the random guy at work, like, so which one of you is, I'm like, are you trying to ask me like which genetics we use? And I'm just, and like someone told me like a great line, we'll tell you when the baby starts asking questions. Cause it's like, it depends. Like, and I think you guys have had this conversation. Like, how much do I want to come out today?
Totally. How much do I feel like doing this right now?
I know I look, I'm a feminine person. My wife has long, there's no real masculine narrative in our, she's a tomboy, but like, I go to get coffee. Oh, your husband and you must be so proud of that baby. Oh, and I'm just like, how much do I want to explain to the coffee cart guy? I don't want to stand here for 20 minutes.
Like, same.
So I'm just like, and like, you know, his first word was dada. Like we thought it was so hilarious. The pediatrician, and of course we're in Brooklyn. She's like, doesn't that just make the patriarchy that much more hilarious? And like men think they're important. She's like,
oh my God.
We're like almost peeing in our pants because she knows how tired I am. And just like
to add to that, I want to add to that because like on my daughter, her first word was like dada or something too. And we thought it was hilarious. But when we tell people that,
they're like, oh, what's wrong with you?
But they like feel bad. And I'm like, no. This is one of the funnies. This is one of the things
exactly.
We love. It's not because we don't feel sad that she doesn't have a dada. It's not
exactly.
That. And she's saying dada. It's just, this shit's hilarious, dude. Yeah. She said like dada.
Pissing our pants. And like, he's like over the, like, you know, in his crib, he's like, looks like a little like, you know, wrestler, like chubby thing. And he's like, da, 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 da. And we're like videotaping him. My dad just like didn't get it. And we were like, no, it's hilarious. Like,
it's funny.
And we're like, you're never going to have a dad.
We're laughing here. And then people will be like, oh, the poor thing. No, he's okay. We're okay.
We're fine.
We're okay. Yeah. It's just, and that's why, like, this podcast is not just for queer folks. Like that guy at your work who asks you about who is the whatever needs to come listen to this show so they start understanding the nuances and like when it's inappropriate and when it's appropriate and how you can act. You know, like this is like, come on.
Everyone in my life who's important knows, and it's just like read the room. Like, right. You know, the entire office kind of like their eyes go up and they're like, and I'm like, yeah, like, I'm going to tell you, like, somebody I loved was like dealing with a hard time, or I wouldn't come up to you and tell you, like, if I was having a hard day at work.
Right. Yeah. Well, like, water cooler conversations, dude.
Exactly.
Don't ask about my pregnancy. Well, you know. Depends. If it's the person, somebody I like, you can ask me about my pregnancy anytime. I don't care.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or I'll be like, actually, I didn't carry her. I look good, right?
Exactly. Like, oh, yeah. I've done that a few times. They're like, oh, my God, the baby's 3 months. You look so good. I'm like, so good. Thank you.
You take it because how much do I feel like coming out right now? And that is like literally a theme. I love this because we're delving into so many kind of just like issues and themes that we go through as queer folks, just in queer parents and in general. We'll be right back.
Queer friendly podcast, love is love.
Y'all, you know what? I've been thinking a lot lately about the non-bio connection, which is something that many of us in this queer community know all too well, the non-bio connection between our children. And, you know, I can talk to my friends about it who are not queer, a lot, I can. But at some point, they get kind of tired of it and they don't always really get it. And that's why having community, like all of you listeners who are in it with me, really matters. And I just want to take a second to highlight another community that I think could be really beneficial for so many of you out there. It's Pregnant Together, the virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, anybody who's ever felt outside the box when it comes to creating your family. It's run by a queer midwife, Maria Goodman. They offer tons of resources and groups, community where you can go and speak with like-minded individuals who know and understand and get what you're going through. I just think this is an invaluable resource, and I'm so happy that they are sponsoring this here show. It's a mwah, beautiful fit. Learn more about them at www.pregnanttogether.com and get your first month free by clicking the link in our show notes. Y'all go check it out. If you don't like what you see after your first month, you can cancel. No big deal. It's free. But you might find something really, really valuable. And that's why I want y'all to try it out. Okay, love ya. Get back to the episode now. Here we go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Love is love.
Let's take it down your path now. So you know, you have the formula, you found the donor. Was it hard to find the donor?
I was more like that with the surrogates. So I mean, I was a model agent and I've always worked with men. So I was like, choo, 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 choo. Because like my wife already did like the intellectual stuff. So I was like, da-da-da-da. And she had like 20 pulled up and I was like, these are the three that we're going to pick from.
Because you're used to like checking profiles and faces and being like, nope.
Yeah. And yes. I was like, he looks lame.
Oh, that's
I was
a skill.
Like, I was like, nerd. I was like, And it wasn't even like about looks. Like it was more just like if these came into the office, I'd be like, oh, I wouldn't even want to talk to him. And then so I got it down in like 5 minutes.
He's a drip. Like,
yeah, I was like wet blanket. And it's cute because she was like, he's definitely the personality is definitely more mine.
And your son.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it works out.
He kind of looks like a distant cousin of my family. So I think it's cute. Like when she was, I didn't even realize she was doing that because I was so like, oh, it's the one thing she really wanted to take as her role. So I wasn't too worried about it. I was like, what will be like, yeah. We use California Cryo, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same.
The service that we got was like, we didn't get voice notes, but we got like 7 pictures. And, you know, they don't give you any, like, they don't give you full names, but they give you, like, they do, like, these really nice essays now. So I felt like we got, like, a...
His essay was what did it for us, the essay.
Same with us, one of them.
Yeah, Yeah, his essay really like hit home. I was like, yes, we talk about his essays to the kids at this point because it's such a great story. Like he's part of the family, which I guess he is actually. See, awkward. It's so many things.
It's so awkward, but it's like that. I think a lot of people have similarities of, and people who are straight and just like, you know, they're like, oh, we just like weren't really trying. And I'm like, it's like, it's not that like you can't look for like the perfect person because like I always say to my life, like, I love you and I'm obsessed with you 99.9% of the time. But there's that like 1% where I really don't like you some days.
I can't stand you right now.
Yeah, I cannot. Like, and like, there's probably like so many things that we wouldn't like about this guy if we met them, and it would be so much harder.
Yeah. There's no such thing as the perfect person.
Exactly. So it's comforting to know that there's so many things that like made us pick them. So yeah, we did that. And then Alana was 37 when we went for her fertility things. And oh my God, 1 month, she's like the furthest fucking thing.
Most fertilest.
Yeah. And I'm like, we got 20 eggs.
Nice.
And I looked at her and I was like, I was like, something's going to go wrong. Like just me. And I am very optimistic, really. That's just my sense of humor. And out of that, we ended up getting 5 embryos. So we did all the testing and everything. And I was like, cool. Like,
right. 5 is good.
5 is great. And so we didn't have to do a second month with her. And the reason why Alana, if she was here, you know, I don't want to speak for her too much, but like, she never in her life was like, she didn't get married, you know, she didn't have serious relationships till like later on. She's like a very, as I said, she's the smartest person in the room, but she's like a huge ditz. She's the middle of 3 kids. Both of her siblings already have kids. She's just like, unless I met you, like I probably wouldn't have had kids. Like, and she's like the best mom. She's she wouldn't like think about how that, like how hard it was probably, you know, like,
yeah.
And she also told me she would have no desire whatsoever to carry. She's been on the same 2 medications since she was 20 due to, you know, mental illness and some stuff that she dealt with in college, either college or law school. And she's just like, no, like, I don't want to ever deal with that again. And it's not like she was hospitalized in like a psych ward, but she knows herself and she's very even and, you know, always knows how she's going to feel the next day, and just an all around healthy, great person, ups and downs, of course. So no one ever questioned her. Like I was always, it was like on my shoulders or shit out of luck.
You know what's funny? This is where I would normally make the joke, good thing you got 2 uteri, you know what I mean? But knowing where your story goes, and so I'm sorry if that's ever offended you. Like, I never thought about that.
No, but I'm willing to share it, and Alana would be totally fine with me saying, you know, and it doesn't make her less feminine to me. It doesn't make her...
Yeah, of course.
And she always says, like, she... And, you know, now there's this whole conversation about, you know, bodies and what women should look like, and especially like within the lesbian community. Like when we came out, it's like, you're a lesbian or you're not.
Right.
And there's, you know, then everyone would talk about like femme, not femme, like, you know, all these things.
There was femme, there was butch.
Yeah. And she's like, she was like, I was just always a tomboy, but like I have long hair and I wore makeup, and she was like kind of like punk rock.
This is my wife, literally. Like, this is how my wife is too. And she's not butch at all. And she's also like not femme, but she's just a lady.
Yeah, she's just like a chick that's like, Alana's like, I don't have a problem with my body. It's just like, I don't like want new bronzer. Like, just tell me which one to get. Like,
that's my wife. Just tell me what to get. I don't want that. But if you're telling me I need to use that, I will, you know?
Yeah.
I'm way more feminine than my wife, but
yeah,
like on a scale. And that's
exactly,
we're all on a scale of something, you know? So there's that.
But that's what I love about women. It's like when she says stuff about like her body, she's just like, yeah, like it's not like it feels weird or anything, but like that wasn't even a conversation. And I'm like, well, I'm grateful that you feel comfortable in your own body, because that is a really challenging life for a lot of people, you know?
To not carry, you mean? Or
like even that guy asking, it's like, I don't want to tell him that. Like, right. And I'm willing to share it in this kind of, because it's beneficial mm-hmm. for people to hear in a genuine yeah. way. But that had nothing to do with why she didn't want to carry. You know what I mean? Like, she is not like uncomfortable being she, her, like it's not that. It's just like, she's like, no, like, don't feel the need to feel something kicking in me. Like, you yeah. know.
And that's a total thing that happens in our community. And there is a sliding scale of how we show up in the world and of gender and of how we express our genders, right? And it's important to tell all the stories.
Yeah. I mean, my story of like body stuff definitely had a role in this. I have been in recovery for anorexia, started with bulimia when I was really young, but I think a lot of people don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I was probably in the best place, or so I thought. And I was like, oh my gosh, let's do it. So like when I had turned 30, mm-hmm. so we had been married like 2 years or something at this point. And, you know, we had the babies on ice. We had the embryos. Mm-hmm. My doctor was like, you need to go see a special like medication doctor who can taper you off. And like, you know, again, that's like $900 an hour. It's like, I don't even know how much money we're spending at this time. Right.
So to like taper
me off of like the medications I've been since I was like 20 year old, because mm-hmm. I had a relapse in college.
Yeah.
And right. now I'm 30. So I'm like 10 years of, I have no symptoms, you know, I'm just
right.
healthy and happy, you know, and I'm married and I'm like, okay, like we're going to do this, but like, I can't, it's not that I necessarily wanted to go off all of my medications, because I know mm-hmm. you could stay on some mm-hmm. and, you know, it scared the shit out of me. But my doctor, who's been my doctor since 19 and I still see him.
That's amazing.
He was like, yeah, he's amazing. He is in Connecticut, but like when I'm in New York, or when I'm still in New York, like I'll go drive and see him, or like we're like pen pals, you know, whatever. But he said to me, you know, this is a really serious, you know, journey in your life, and I want you to go see someone in Manhattan. So it's like, at this new person, I don't know, nothing is her fault, but like within 3 weeks, I'm off all psychiatric meds. Ooh. Like, and I was on low doses of things, you know, like maintenance. Right. And
yeah, because you've been on a whole journey with them.
Yeah. And I'm mm-hmm. pro medicine, but I'm also like, I have brain chemistry that I just think I might be on some things for the rest of my life. I might not. But within mm-hmm. that month, I'm also taking 30, one thing I can remember, I'm taking 30 milligrams of estrogen.
Yeah.
Because like right away, they were like, your uterine lining is too thin. Then I start taking progesterone, and then shit just hits.
I hated progesterone. Yeah.
Yeah. My face, like I looked like a puffer fish. And it wasn't like that I felt like, oh my God, I'm going to be in the hospital again. I just felt like my brain was not normal.
Right. So the combination of going off your meds and then starting these fertility meds.
Within really 5 weeks, I yeah. was like, it was the perfect storm of uncontrollably crying, like just really in my adult life feeling like the lowest, you know, just all this really self-loathing, going from, you know, 2 months ago where I'm like skipping into work every day, yeah. I'm going to have a baby too, and I don't get pregnant, you know, so we can imagine Alana's like coming and picking me up at work and Ubers. I'm like getting very like violently sick also from the IVF drugs. Oh. And on top of that, I'm like, I can't like eat anything. So I'm like, oh, I must be pregnant. But like, you know, I'm so bloated from everything.
So they really did a number on you, these drugs.
They really did a number on me.
And some of us, they do. I mean, they did a number on me, but it doesn't sound as extreme as what you had.
And then some people stop taking them and like their life goes back to normal. And we didn't get pregnant. I'm not going to name the fertility clinic we went to because I just did not have a good experience. Yeah. I never got a call from the doctor telling me I wasn't pregnant. He never reached out to us. He sent us an email 3 weeks later saying, if you guys want to try again, I believe that you'll have success.
Ooh.
never called me. Yeah, it was that. And I was already in like a downward spiral.
Right.
And I bring up my eating because I never, thank God, like went back to symptoms or anything. But I was like, this is the time where I'm like, I just thought I was like, great. And now I'm feeling like this little 14-year-old girl. I was just, it was so traumatic to me. So I immediately went back and, you know, did some new therapies and everything, you know, and I had a body change and I don't want to trigger anyone, but it was really like 6 months. And like, my mom was like, you can do it. You've gotten through so much in your life and blah, blah, blah. And I said to my mom, I'm not doing it again.
Can't do it.
I want to be the best mother possible. And this is also when COVID hit. So we were like out of the offices.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want to be the best mother possible. And for me to do that, like I need to spend like the next year on like getting back, like just going back on the pills. Like I feel like I've had scary thoughts that I haven't had in over 10 years.
Oh my God, and I wasn't so scary.
Doing any of those symptoms, but it fucked me up so bad. And then one day I'm listening to If These Ovaries Can Talk, aka the Queer Family Podcast, and I'm like learning about surrogacy and like how there's like really surrogates for like queer people.
Yeah.
And we met the CEO of Growing Generation. She came and met us in person.
This is amazing.
She was like, honey, you don't have to tell me why you don't want to carry. And I just felt like a little bit of weight off my shoulders, a little bit of weight off my shoulders. And she goes, but now that you shared with me, I'll share with you. And she told me a little bit about her story. And I was just like, oh my God, there's other people that have been through this. And like IVF sucks. And she was like, this is going to be a long journey, but like, you're going to heal. You're going to heal.
Aww, I love, was that Kim or that was someone else?
Kim met us.
Oh, go listen to Kim's episode. It's like season one or season two.
Go.
I'll find it. It's called Growing Generations.
We left that meeting and Lana and I hugged and she was like, it's not your fault. Like, it's just not your fault.
It's not. It's not. But it's hard when you're in that spiral and when you're going through everything you're going through, it's so hard to not think it's your fault. And I completely get it. I completely get it. Ugh. Oh my God. So you find Kim. You find Growing Generations.
It took us about 4 months to be matched with our wonderful, I got her permission to say her name, Valerie.
Hey, Valerie. Go ahead, girl.
She was a first-time surrogate, but the only thing that all surrogates have in common is that they've had non-complicated births before. She lives in like the Midwest area. And at that time we were like, we don't care, you know, like blah, blah, blah. And it was COVID. So it's not like we could go to her doctor's appointments or anything with her. So we never met her until the birth.
Oh, wow. But except like Zooms and stuff.
Yeah, we Zoomed with her all the time.
You didn't talk about choosing her though.
That process is weird. Like you have to write a whole thing and there's a team that's like vetting both of them and they kind of send, I think, a couple prospects to the surrogates that are like within like what you want. Like we didn't want someone like Alaska, obviously. What she really liked about us is we only wanted to do one embryo.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she said a lot of the couples wanted to do like two or three.
Just to try to get as most as you can in the one because it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. It's like $5,000 more to do an extra one. And then, you know, a lot of people, if like they have twins and they're done.
That's the giant pull towards that. And I get it. I can see like, okay, let's just try to get two kids in one here. I mean,
I could see myself maybe doing it again, like doing twins, but she was meant to be our surrogate, you know?
So you choose her.
She chooses us, we choose her, and then it like becomes official and you do like weeks of paperwork.
Yeah.
Even though Growing Generations is an agency, I will say that they have everything's in-house. So you sign up for them. They're very transparent about their fees. They have an in-house lawyer. So you never have to file anything, but like you have to do a lot of the paperwork. And like Alana was like, I will say like all of that was her. But like I did do binders for like the different surrogacy agencies we met with. And I just liked them the best because it was like, if you had a problem with, like, you know, they booked airfare for the surrogate, they booked all the appointments. We had to interview like doctors and things like that. But it's like a concierge service.
So the beauty of this is that you're only paying this agency. You're not having to like dole out money to over here and over here.
Yeah, you have a bank account. And so every time like they pay a lawyer, it's on your behalf. And, you know, at the end, you could actually get some money back.
If they don't use it all. Interesting.
Yeah, the one funny thing that happened to us was, you know, you get vetted and also they make it easiest for you with the like archaic laws that are in place.
Right.
I don't want to say the state that she's from, but it's very surrogate friendly. Like we went to the hospital and right away they were like, oh, we just had dads from Australia. And like the agency was like, oh, we made a little tiny mistake. And we want her to get inseminated in Connecticut.
They always could be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they always give birth like where they're from because obviously, like, if it happens,
how are you going to cop on tomorrow, a plane when you go into like, labor?
Yeah. Exactly. So they're like, there's a little problem. If she gets, you know, inseminated, AKA like technically pregnant in Connecticut, because New York, it hadn't passed yet, you're going to have to go to court with the lawyers and like adopt your child. And we were like, okay, no, just do whatever you have to do. Because we like already connected with her. Yeah. And like, thank God we're like chill. And like, we were so like on the same page because I was like, I don't want to go through the process of like finding someone and get, and like, it was COVID. So I was like, I don't even know if we'll be able to get in the room.
Right.
So she has to travel anyway. And yeah, like it just wasn't a big deal to us at the time.
It's also so dumb. Like you trying to tell me that somebody who travels to New York City and gets pregnant, like think about how many people get pregnant in New York City who are not from New York City or Connecticut or anywhere. Yeah. People get pregnant everywhere, but they still, oh, they still have rights to their baby.
Yeah, that's why it's so crazy to me. Like with second parent adoption, I'm like, oh, they also told me that if we did the reciprocal IVF, mm-hmm. Alana would have to adopt her own baby.
Yeah, because you're the birth mother has rights to the child.
But like, is that like with straight couples? Like, let's say that I was married to a man and I had to get an egg donor and it was his sperm. Would he have to adopt the child?
Yeah, I don't know. Right?
That's what I don't know either. So like I was thinking about that more when he was coming, but like we didn't have to adopt him. It was, so we were in a state. All they had to do was they filed on our behalf. You know, it's in a big chunk of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no adoption because it was like California's the best place to do it.
Good to know. Huh. So you both just had rights to.
So she was a gestational carrier.
Yeah, that's how she's categorized. And you're the birth parent. So you both had birth parent status.
And it was all done through court system in the state where she lived and California.
So how many times did you have to try with your surrogate?
Once.
Yay! Go ahead, Valerie. And then bada boom, bada bing. Crazy long distance pregnancy journey. And baby is born.
Baby is born. And I have to say, because I was in therapy and when I saw her and met her and, you know, we talked about the delivery room and everything. And I asked if I could, you know, be there with her and everything. And my wife like faints at like a blood like prick. So I was like, I don't care if you faint. I was like, just let me like watch. And it was very healing, very healing.
And you got your mental health back on track.
Yeah.
If this is what you need for your mental health, this is what you do. And it's a beautiful thing that you were able to do.
Yeah. And it's not everyone's answer, you know, obviously. People have to do surrogacy for different reasons. But for me, it was really hard. And a lot of people obviously don't talk about it. So I never thought we would do it. And you know, I had all those fears too of like, are we going to connect? Like, Mm-hmm. Now I have no attachment to the baby, but like all that shit went away.
Right. When you saw him, it all works out in the end.
Yeah.
You're going to love that baby no matter what.
Of course.
Yeah. I have a question. How many times do people say to you, and how does this make you feel? And what do you say to them back? How many times do people say, well, why didn't you just use Alana?
Yeah. People say it a lot. More so in the beginning, like when he was like really little, because they'd be like, you carried. Because like I did have a body change, so I did look like different. Because people just assumed like it was me. And then when I would like go into it, and I was like, she didn't want to carry. It was simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
People who are smart like understood and like got the message.
Conversation done. None of your business anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a lot. In the beginning, it was a lot. Like, oh, you're two women, you know? Only gay guys have to do this.
But you're showing us that's not true. And I bet you you're not alone. I bet you there are many more out there just like you who have gone this route.
You know, mental health is so important, you know, and a lot of some women can't do it because of physical health or things that are going inside their body that we don't talk about or other reasons.
Some women just don't want to, and that's okay, right? Let's normalize that.
Yeah.
That's Alana. She just doesn't want to. Okay.
She doesn't want to even go there. And when I met Kim Brown, she goes, thank you for sharing. But women come in here and they just say, I want a baby, but I don't want to carry it. And she goes, usually they're a little bit older than you, but they are successful in any which way you want to define that. And that's, we don't have a policy.
Yeah.
Why would we? She was like, we were the ones who were oppressed by the medical system. So why would I judge someone if they don't want to carry a baby, but they want it?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So
it's, you know, judgment.
It is. And it, your story and this episode here just be a testament to like the normalization of any way is a beautiful way. Okay.
Yeah.
And like, however you feel and however, like Alana didn't want to, so she didn't want to let her do what she needs to do. Right? You needed to get your mental health on track. It's more important than anything.
Exactly.
There's no shame in any of this. I know you know that. I'm just throwing it out to the universe just because we have to normalize this shit.
I know that what you're not okay, a lot of women, and this for years or months, and like they just continue it because that's what they're supposed to do. We're supposed to be able to have children, and that's true.
We're conditioned to carry babies.
You know, maybe it doesn't mean surrogacy for you, but it's like, it's just so unbelievable to me, the pain that you see in these women's eyes, because they're just so far gone, you know? And I'm just like, I wouldn't be able to be a good mother, like even going through another week of that. So I think maybe because of my like past trauma with the way I was treated and the way women are treated in mental health, I was putting my foot down and I was like, no, I don't want to be sick or being put in that category while I'm trying to do something that I feel ready for.
Right. And also put into the category of she's supposed to do this and she's pushing through. Good for her.
Yeah. Because that's what we all say. And like my friends that have been through either like miscarriages or IUIs or whatever, however you identified, I was like, what do you need to hear? And they're like, that this fucking sucks.
Yeah. And it does.
Not push through.
Right. And sometimes it fucking sucks and you need to find another option. And if that's who you, and that's you, if that's you, that's okay.
Yeah.
And a door will open.
You and your person will figure it out. And sometimes your voice needs to be the loudest one because your body is like suffering. This isn't normal. Like you don't feel normal in a day. This isn't a bad period, you know?
I have a friend from college who, when I started the podcast, reached out to me. I hadn't talked to her in forever, but she started texting me and she was like, oh, I love that you're doing this. And I had given, she had given birth to her first, who's the same age as my daughter. And she said, I am in the surrogacy process right now because I got so scared of my mental health, she went down a real bad, bad spiral. Giving birth did that to her. Her postpartum did that to her. She was so scared that if she did another pregnancy, it would be worse. And, you know, God forbid what happens.
Right.
So she used a surrogate for her second. And I, when she reached out to me, I was like, oh, okay, thanks for letting me. I hadn't, because we had only interviewed like three people. It was like so new to me. I was like, interesting. Oh, okay. And now I see like how very, very important every single one of these conversations is, because they're life-saving.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing this. And, you know, you're my first lesbian surrogate story. And I bet you there'll be more now.
Anytime we can talk about something that's important. Even when I was, you know, still working and like in the grind and had really hard days, I'm like, I hope that I let someone know that they can talk to me. It's like, talk about hard things with your friends, because whether you're in a traditional relationship, straight, gay, whatever, like, we're supposed to bury those things and we're supposed to keep them within the confines. And I've never been like that. I've always been in, you know, had good friends and all those things, but it's still like things like this, mental health and attached to IVF, like women, like we're supposed to push through and we're supposed to be these types of mothers nowadays. And we're supposed to have like this job that supersedes like all these things. And we're supposed to spend all this time and we're supposed to do self-care and all these things. And it's like, it's too much to not have feelings about it. So I just think that, yeah, talk about hard things. And it doesn't, you could have all types of resources for that.
Thank you for sharing. And it's a beautiful story. And congrats on the little guy.
Thank you.
Exciting stuff. It's exciting.
Thank you.
It rocks.
Thanks so much, Jamie.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah Baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.